Red Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 44th International Film Festival Rotterdam, and I'm joined by filmmaker Kivu Ruhorahoza, who is presenting his film Things of the Aimless Wanderer. So thanks very much for joining us, first of all.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's a real pleasure having you here. And I saw the film, very powerful stuff. But for the listeners who haven't had the pleasure of seeing it yet, would you like to maybe tell us something about the story or maybe what the film is about?
So the film is about paranoia, I guess. It's about miscommunication between Westerners and locals in an African country that I don't necessarily name. And the story is about a Western foreign news correspondent who meets a local girl, and the next day she disappears. And I propose three versions of her disappearance, which are all based on true stories that happened in Kigali, Rwanda, where I come from. And I don't know if my film is a bit of a feminist piece, but there's a lot of the critique of patriarchal societies,
yeah,
where they all want to feel like they need to guide or protect or lead the life of this young girl while she has her own life and she has her own issues.
It's quite powerful at that also, because, you know, to be honest, we don't really see a lot of representation in this particular area of the world. Rwanda is kind of still an obscure object in the international cinematic audience. And so did you ever feel that? Did you ever feel like maybe it's the representation of the place is almost non-existent?
Unfortunately, that's the truth. Whenever there's in the last few years, the only images that were produced about Rwanda were done by people who didn't necessarily understood or who didn't have who didn't understand the complexity of my people and my country. And there are all these images about genocide, because 20 years after a genocide is not much, so it's still very much a hot subject. And unfortunately, the Rwandan film professionals that are active right now, they're not well trained. So there's that wanting to make films, but unfortunately, because they're not trained, so they don't make films that end up being seen outside Rwanda. Yeah, so we're not there yet, but we're working hard to truly own and control our image and our representation and the portrayal of our people.
Yeah,
but the way I make my films and the kind of my storytelling style, of course, makes it difficult to get my films out there and make them they will probably never become mainstream objects. But again, I do not intend to represent or to be the ambassador of any cause or any group of any generation. I'm not a recluse, but I like working on my own and doing things that I'm really pleased about. So it makes it difficult to get my films widely seen. But again, it's not every artistic effort is destined to everyone, and it's a conscious choice. It's not me being elitist or anything, but it's a conscious choice.
And what's really interesting is that we talked about the different interpretations of the outcome that the disappearance of this girl would have had in the story, and because there is three, and really the main players in this particular event are three players, were you also looking at the different viewpoints from the different heritages that they might have had? You know, you got the female one, you got the Western one, and then you got the local one.
Right now more than ever there is a complaint about how Western foreign news correspondents have the monopoly of opinion on an entire continent, and there are very few of them who are out there and who are living romanticized lives, and they're very smart people, but again, Africa is the only continent that you can love as a continent, and I'm saying this sarcastically, right? Yeah. So the ways that issues are being reported, or the ways how you see these young journalists who are hoping to have to write their pull through type of book published at some point to the beautiful acacia tree on the cover. There's being more and more resentment towards them, and in the last few years with the WikiLeaks upper American embassy collecting all sorts of information. So there's so much paranoia, and there's more and more debate about the how much we've westernized ourselves and how much of it we can take, and there's the role of the African male, and I use quotations, the African male feeling more and more alienated and feeling that he's made irrelevant, and having this sometimes violent reaction, and having this systematic suspicion of anything Westerner, and we see that in so many countries where people are just saying we have to be authentic, but what's authenticity anyway? So it's that resentment and that fear of neocolonialism,
right?
But things have gone too far. We're Westernized. The West has won hands down, and we're playing in a world that has been designed by the West. For now, yeah. But now, how do you deal with that? So you have all these people are feeling more and more insecure. All these intellectuals and people in the public arena, and having this kind of epidemic reactions to the presence of anything Westerner in the surroundings.
So it's like a domino effect of sorts. Is that actually the reason why the reason behind the introduction, where we go drastically from a more natural environment to something that looks a little more, well, a lot more modern, and also to something that starts to feel like a film noir in a way?
So there's we have this black character who sees a white male with a beautiful girl, and for him there's that sense of tribal loss, and they come here, they take everything from us, they take our authority away, they take our women away, and the first thing you see in the film is a map from the colonial times, and you see an explorer. So there's that interpretation of modern Western attitudes. We see them sometimes through a prism of neocolonialism. So that's why I introduced the film with that explorer who's a bit lost in a jungle, and who's just wandering around, and who's being harassed. And also, but on the other side, you have for a news correspondent who claim to be harassed by African governments, and who like to feel that they're being oppressed, and who like to feel like their lives are dangerous, and who almost wish that they could be taken hostage maybe for 2 days and have that in a biography. I know, of course, no one wants to be taken hostage, but I'm just saying, yeah. So you have that paranoia on both sides.
Perhaps if you could say a little bit about the choice of kind of not using too much dialogue, of kind of allowing natural sounds and sometimes a lack of dialogue to speak, mm-hmm. and the images to speak more than actual words.
So I've decided that I will never use extensive dialogue until the moment I get proper production resources, and I can really rehearse them as much as possible, because good dialogue is a very difficult thing to achieve. I think that I'd rather have no dialogue rather than have cheap dialogue, and I think that in a film where we're talking about miscommunication and we're talking about two worlds that have miserably failed to communicate with each other, I'd rather have just these. I think it increases the tension, and the suspense, and personally, I like being able to because we're in a visual medium here. I like being able to tell my story with images and sounds and music so there's a particular attention that was paid on the sound. Soundscape and the music used in the film.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I wish you all the best with it, and thanks very much for talking with us about it.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, and this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.